Welcome to The Art Scene and the first program of the 2013-14 season, presented to you each week by UALR's College of Arts, Humanities and Social Sciences and UALR Public Radio. I'm Anne Nicholson. To open a new season with a musical works very well, as we know from Arkansas Rep's memorable successes. But this year's choice, a musical dating back to 1940, is unusual, which intrigued a lot of us when we heard Bob Hupp, Rep's producing artistic director, announce Pal Joey this season's choice. Music by Richard Rogers, words by Lawrence Hart. The director for the show is Peter Schneider, and Patrick Pacheco has written the book. Both men have remarkable credentials. Schneider was with Disney for 17 years, president of the animation department, producing things like Beauty and the Beast and Toy Story, before moving to Broadway, winning a Tony for producer of The Lion King. Pacheco is a highly successful arts journalist from New York City. They came to our studio to describe their fascination with this musical and the decision to remake it, rising from the rapport they established together when first they met, and make a very convincing case. Peter Schneider.
Patrick and I have worked together for the last 5, 7, 10 years. We met when I was doing Lion King on Broadway, and he interviewed me for the LA Times. And our friendship has stuck from that day.
Peter is very inspirational. Among many of our projects, we did Waking Sleeping Beauty, a documentary of a 10-year period in the Disney company in which the animation department was revived from 1984 to 1994. Peter's the type of person who has no rules. So when it came to doing various projects, even though I had never written a documentary or written a play, he didn't seem to care about that. He just said, do it. So that's how I sort of ended up collaborating on Pal Joey.
I'm always interested in things that are theatrical and are connective with the audiences. I'm always looking for things to explain why the human condition is the way it is. And Pal Joey is one of these men that's very charismatic, very talented, and somewhat flawed. And I'm very interested in charismatic men who change the world, but may not necessarily be the best human beings in the world.
The other thing that intrigued me is I went and looked up John O'Hara, and Pal Joey was virtually put together 1940, I think it came out.
It was a series of letters published in The New Yorker, and it was John O'Hara who then, after these series of letters were published, went to Rogers and Hart and said, I think this might be a musical. And being as adventurous as they were, Rogers and Hart said, let's do it.
Well, I'm glad that I've got the two of you here because that was a long time ago. It stuck in my mind. I've never seen it. But Pal Joey has stayed with me because somehow its fortunes faltered. It never seemed to get the big Broadway bash that one associated with the Rogers Hart and then, of course, the Rogers Hammerstein connections. And in the History of Operetta by Richard Traubner, he includes the musicals and says things like, the best score that Rogers and Hart had written for a long time was a great score, was Pal Joey.
Which we agree with. And it's a great score, and they are great writers. The show was quite successful on Broadway in 1950, 52, Patrick was saying to me.
1940 when it opened first, and then again.
In 52, and it's never had a very successful revival since then. It's had many people attempt to revive it, and it's not been a joyous celebration. And I think we have taken this on, we've been working on it for about 5 years, we've taken it on because we felt we had a solution to the various issues that may have made it not successful in reviving it. And one of them is being joyful. I think Patrick keeps pushing this. It's a joyful musical about connection. And that's why we went at this and decided to write a new book to it and bring in some Rogers and Hart songs that were not originally in the score and throw a couple of songs out.
It was very adventurous. It was very controversial when it first opened, and it got some really dicey reviews, this young man being kept by an older woman, a socialite at the time, who was also in love with a young ingenue. And it had one foot in the old time musicals, the musical tradition out of which Rodgers and Hart came. And it had one, it was looking forward to the new era of musicals as well. So it was always a bit bifurcated in that way.
Because musicals since then have touched on tricky subjects and brought them into the story and dealt with them very effectively.
Totally.
I think that's what we've tried to do, is try to make it more successfully in terms of connect them about those subjects, to actually explore those subjects deeper than maybe Rodgers and Hart and John O'Hara did in the 1940s.
So this is the sort of conversation the two of you had when you were playing with the idea of doing this. What did you start with? Did you just lay out all that was good in the original and then tweak it so that some of the actions, some of the music would fit better for your plan in a different part of the story? Did you have sort of musical signposts that helped you on the way?
You know, it's interesting you ask the question, because when I think about that, I think the first decision we made was to try and figure out how to make Joey understandable. Forget whether you want to like the man, but the flaw that we'd seen in the production was Joey never connected with an audience. You never liked the man. I think the first decision we made was to make it interracial, cast Joey as an African-American, which gave us so many possibilities about it upping the stakes in terms of the tension that the socialite Vera is white. The person he's in love with, or should be in love with, is Linda, the waitress, who is black. And try and make this about these issues that still churn in America today, but actually raised the stakes in 1948.
1948 is a very sexy period in America. It is the Beat Generation is going on. It's also a year in which Jackie Robinson has broken the color barrier. Joe Louis is the heavyweight champion of the world. Harry Truman has integrated the armed forces. There's a tremendous amount of racial progress that's going on. And it also, as Peter said, it raises the stakes in making Joey black. It also makes it more poignant in terms of the fact that this young man is trying to get a piece of the American dream, and the American dream that he defines as white, succeeding in the white world in the way that his heroes, Joe Louis and Jackie Robinson, have succeeded.
Now, the central character, Joey, was a dancer in the first go round as well.
Gene Kelly.
Ah. Uh-huh.
Made him a star on Broadway.
I realize that, yes. So now, with the jazz and African-American music background that features in so many musicals these days, is man-made for this particular idea that you've been toying with and are finally bringing to fruition?
You know, Mike Arena, who's done all the music, adapting all the music for Richard Rodgers' music, really had a big idea, which was Patrick's, about bringing the jazz element into the arrangements, making the songs more jazz-based, that you see the music transition from Act 1 to Act 2, from being more musical theater, sort of square, as we say, to a much more hip jazz feel in Act 2. And it's part of the story, which is the music is helping tell this story of transition, of progress, of jazz, of the mixture of the white and black world in terms of the whole show.
And of course, 1948, for the black and the white world, they're still miles apart in spite of the legal connections. That who puts their foot in the water first?
There were two things that sort of inspired that. A fact came. I love facts. And one of the facts that came across my desk was that two most recorded jazz covers in history are by Richard Rodgers: My Funny Valentine and My Favorite Things. And I asked a jazz musician friend of mine, why is it? And he said, because of the way that Rodgers composes, it's just catnip to jazz performers. The other thing that was happening in 1948 and that I found so attractive in reading On the Road and looking into the Beat Generation is that Kerouac and Neil Cassidy, they were young, but they were middle class young people who loved the black culture. They loved the black culture. They found it hip. They wanted, in some ways, to be black. And blacks at that time, certain blacks, wanted to be white. So there is that irony that is going on in our pal Joey between one of the characters, Ted, this jazz-loving pianist in the club who wants what Joey wants at the same time that Joey wants what Ted is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Joey comes sweeping into that club. He transforms everything. He appends everything because he's a rule breaker.
So how did you add to his character to make it more audience friendly so that they would identify with him and his struggles rather than, you say, nobody would take to him?
In the original Pal Joey, Joey was not talented. He just was an untalented, not-so-much kind of guy. It's much more interesting to see Joey be a really talented singer, dancer, performer. And why the African-American idea came to us is that that is the reason he's not made it. Not that he's untalented. He's really talented. And he sings and he dances, and it's beautiful to watch him. And you fall in love with him because he's so talented.
You add logic to the story.
Correct. And therefore, that's how it opens in terms of, as I say, in the first number, the audience must fall in this huge dance number, which is beautifully tap danced and wonderful. The audience must fall in love with Joey. And in the I Want song, which we've created, Michael Reno has created for the character, Linda falls in love with him. And then in the next song, Ted must again musically fall in love with Joey. And then in Ladies of Tramp, Vera must fall in love with Joey. So by the time we get 35 minutes into the show, everybody should love Joey and respect Joey. And then you discover maybe there's some drama behind it all as well.
And yeah, where's the music fits the story. Oh, instead of the music being what one remembers, but not so much why it didn't succeed.
Exactly. I mean, I think that the thing that makes Pal Joey so universal, apart from the black and white issues, that makes it universal to everybody, is that Joey is an optimist. And optimism is a part of our DNA as Americans. And it's also a part of the quintessential musical. The American musical is all about optimism. And there is a subset of the American musical, Gypsy, How to Succeed in Business, and Funny Girl, about these central characters who want to show the world. It's, and Pal Joey is that.
So you feel that the character that Mr. Hart created was more a reflection of his image of himself. And so the inner genius of the character wasn't allowed to come out.
You know, that's a lovely way of putting it. And the way we solved that is that we added a new character to the show, Ted. So we, out of Patrick, has created this character, Ted, the piano player in the bar, who actually writes, our conception is, he writes the tunes. So he is the Lawrence Hart character, right? He is that character that helps us, tells us the story, and carries that angst in some sense, so that Joey doesn't have to carry the angst, right? That,
yeah.
That Ted gets to carry the angst and that question about who am I and what's life all about and what is a man. And Joey gets to be this talented, optimistic pan character that changes the world.
I think that in this character of Ted, he really sort of is the stand-in for Lawrence Hart, or Larry Hart. And he was a very unhappy man, Larry Hart. He was sort of known as the poet laureate of sadomasochism because he was he was unloved. All his songs are about love and yearning and wanting to connect, which is another universal aspect of the show will appeal to people.
And I think you're right, it does do it through the music, when you have bewitched, bothered, and bewildered. But what we've done is made it a trio. We've made it the end of Act One. It is sung as a trio. It is a surprise in terms of emotional surprise. You actually connect with the characters. And why we got the rights from the Rodgers and Hammerstein, Rodgers and Hart estate was because of our arrangement of this particular song, that it was such a beautiful, interesting, dynamic, theatrical idea that Ted Chapin, who is the executor and the president of that organization, said, oh my God, please go further and do more.
You must have had a lot of fun because you've introduced some songs that weren't in it. Which ones? I mean, you'd listen, you think, oh my God, we must put that one in. Where can we put it? Who's going to have it? Sort of thing.
Well, that was fascinating about that process. And Peter made a very good point about this, is that a lot of the numbers that we threw out, had nothing to do to further the story. So Peter was very good about pushing the idea that these songs had to be integrated. A song like Sing for Your Supper, which was written for their musical Boys from Syracuse. Well, when you're talking about a musical in which a socialite keeps a young man and he has to sing for his supper, it seems as if this song was written for it. And when we were talking earlier about Larry Hart being the poet laureate of sadomasochism, what could be more sadomasochistic than a song called I'm Glad to Be Unhappy, which is another song that we took from a different musical and put it into this musical, and it totally fits.
The one song we didn't find a place for was Funny Valentine.
That's exactly right.
Right, that was one of the things we said, oh, we must find a place for Funny Valentine, and it never fit. In fact, it was in and out and in and out. Ladies of Tramp is in there because one day we said, oh, that song just doesn't, the song that was previous in it, just doesn't work. What should we put in? Ladies and Tramp. Okay, got it, great, next.
And so it's fun.
It's fun.
And it's joyful.
And it works.
And it works. And so a lot of it is serendipitous. A lot of it is just timing. And a lot of it is real hard slog. It's hard to put together a musical.
Another song, which is absolutely key to our themes, is Tell Me I Know How to Love. It's a fairly obscure song. And we put it in, took it out, put it in, took it out. But we found a way to put it in because it is so thematic. One of the major themes of the musical is how to connect.
And it now becomes a quartet. They're singing Glad to Be Unhappy, Tell Me I Know How to Love.
And it never happened before.
It never happened before. And we've sort of taken these songs and put them thematically together in Act Two. And we're sort of emulating the quintet from West Side Story.
Found the songs for the right place in the show.
That's key.
Peter Snyder and Patrick Pacheco. Peter is director and Patrick has written the book for this remake of the Rodgers and Hart musical Pal Joey, which opens on Rep's main stage September the 6th. For tickets, call 501-378-0405 or visit online therep.org.
Here's a look at what's happening in the arts in Arkansas. Today at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville, The Spiritualist is on stage at the Studio Theater, shows at 2 and 7, with performances continuing through September 15th. Starting Tuesday at Walton Arts Center, Jersey Boys. Performances each evening this week with matinees on Saturday and Sunday in Baum Walker Hall. Tuesday at ASU Mountain Home, the Golden Dragon Acrobats perform at 7 p.m. Wednesday, the Little Rock Musical Coterie presents a young artist concert, 11 a.m. at Trinity United Methodist Church. Cellist Tavi Underleiter will perform. He's the winner of the 2013 National Federation of Music Clubs Young Artist Competition in Strings. Thursday at Harding University in Searcy, the Merling Trio performs, 7 p.m. in the Administration Auditorium. Opening Friday at Weekend Theater in Little Rock, 100 Saints You Should Know. Performances each Friday and Saturday at 7:30 through September 21st. Next Sunday at the Arkansas Arts Center, it's the Last Call for Kenwood House party, the final chance to see the Treasures of Kenwood House, 6 to 8 p.m. Or, if you can't make the party next week, visit the Arts Center this week for this exhibit that includes works by Rembrandt, Van Dyck, and Gainsborough. Also on display at the Arts Center, Ryan Snigaki, Museum School Pottery Artist in Residence. And closing today at the Art Center, Bauhaus 2021, an ongoing legacy, photographs by Gordon Watkinson. And currently on display at the Butler Center Main Gallery in the Arkansas Studies Institute, the Mid-Southern Watercolorist's 43rd Annual Juried Exhibition. And that's a look at the arts calendar for this week. For more on what's going on in Arkansas, visit our online calendar at ualrpublicradio.org.
My next two guests also make things happen. John Godin is board chairman of the Argenta Arts Foundation and the force that helped create the Argenta Arts District in North Little Rock. And pianist Tatiana Reutmann, one of a number of people in the arts who is drawn in by him to take part in an 8-week workshop, Artist Inc., beginning September the 9th. And hosted by the Argenta Arts Foundation in partnership with the Arkansas Arts Council, Mid-America Arts Alliance, and the Arts Council of Metropolitan Kansas City. Artist Inc. is a program that has proven impressively successful over the last 4 years in Kansas City, and Argenta and Oklahoma City are the first two pilot programs outside of Kansas City. John Godin takes up the story.
And I'm on the Mid-America Arts Alliance board, and I really kind of first heard about it there. The University of Missouri at Kansas City has been doing the program there for about 4 or 5 years in their innovation center. It's called Artist Inc. They had never brought it to anywhere else in the country. And Mid-America approached University of Missouri at Kansas City about offering it to some of the sites around the country. They did applications from the 6-state Mid-America region, and the Argenta Arts Foundation, which I'm the chairman of, we submitted an application, and we were the first site outside of Kansas City to receive it.
My first interest, of course, was Was it all the arts? Was it interdisciplinary of the arts, not just art? And I was wondering, you've had a meeting earlier this year, but you've got this 8-week course starting. And of course, the application date is long gone, but it just to me seems that you need to talk about it and get it into the community's perceptions when it's about to happen, so that there can be some stories about it and people involved, and explain how it works.
Artist Inc. is an 8-week workshop. We've gone through a process of seeking applicants, and we had 37 applicants from artists in every imaginable genre, which was really exciting.
Musicians, recording engineers.
Really a full mix. Yeah. The program in Kansas City, they have 400 veterans that have been through the program. And so we were real excited about it. So when we did the application and we started accepting applications, we had 37 applicants for 25 spots.
What criteria?
The first really major criteria is the quality of the work. The workshop is all about bringing professional, really a toolbox to working artists, to keep them as working artists and to expand the community's base of working artists, and hopefully to be able to have those artists work together and really crossbreed from the different genres.
And so with music and theater and art and all the spin-offs from that, the different areas, as you have the different genre, how soon did you come on board, Tatiana?
The other section of this program is also a group of facilitators. So the people that, I guess, help facilitate the seminar really, to a great degree, a support network for artists. And it functions in small groups. First, through various sources, I found out from John that they were seeking the facilitators. And so I became one of those people. And I believe, how many do we have here?
We have six facilitators.
We have six facilitators.
In what fields are they?
Various. Myself music, being music, yeah. A colleague of mine, Christina Marinova, is also music. Then we have a lot of painters.
And writers.
And writers.
Theater.
One of the writers is a playwright and has done theater. And
I think having another perspective, so myself as a musician, I will work with, of course, probably other musicians, but also non-musicians, painters. And what I believe the advantage of that being coming from another field is that I learn about other people's work and what it entails to be, I'm able to offer a different perspective.
Are they unlikely to be students at the moment?
The top priority on the checklist basically is quality of work, and they cannot be students. It's people who have been in the profession, because the workshop really is to help further their careers. But the artists that come into the program have to have something to work with, to make sure that they have a body of work that could be judged and built on. Even though they're advanced in the profession, some of the skill sets through this workshop are terrific for longtime artists. And Tatiana can talk about some of the facilitators we met who are really at the top of their field, mm-hmm. and how they're reinventing themselves.
Basically, the part of the workshop is not only how do you improve on your skills, etc. It's also the business aspect, the marketing. Actually, also the camaraderie that comes from talking to other artists and realizing that you might have similar issues, or that somebody has a solution to a similar issue that you might have. One of the most interesting things I found as a facilitator, we went through this program in Kansas City. That was a part of our training. You get an incredible amount of feedback from various angles that you've never thought about. I feel as a fairly new person to the city, and why I was so excited about participating in Artist Inc., is that this program really connects people. It connects artists. We as artists, as classical musicians, as recording engineers, photographers, we tend to be stuck in our studio. For instance, I was not aware that the city had such a vibrant artistic community. And I'm so encouraged and excited to meet all these people. And the reason I wasn't aware, because my daily life doesn't bring me to them and doesn't necessarily bring them to me. To be connected to all these artists throughout the city and the region is thrilling. And I have a feeling I'm not the only one that feels that way. I know painting is probably a very solitary endeavor. And so as much as we enjoy that, of course, a part of our art, I think it's nice sometimes to be able to meet other fellow souls.
Did you get people from all over the state?
Fairly regional. Because it's an eight-week program on a Monday evening, you know, we tried to keep it within, you know, an hour and a half drive, Conway, Hot Springs, not a whole lot from the north part of the state.
Now, what about the workshop itself? 8 weeks, one meeting a week. Where will this be? In the Argenta Theater that you will be meeting?
No, it'll be in the Art Connection building at 201 East 4th Street in Argenta. It's an open gallery space, and then there's facilities to be able to break out enough area to be able to have our breakout meetings, because each of the facilitators during the course of the workshop, which is 3 hours a night on those 8 Mondays in a row, part of that is a breakout session with your facilitator.
Mm-hmm. And do your participants participate in a way that shows their skills, whether it's music or art or a work in progress for a play or something? What is the way they show what their skills are?
This program has various elements where it's a presentation about, I guess, your life and your art. And this is something we're gearing up as facilitators to present in a few weeks. You have to present yourself and represent yourself, what you're about as an artist. Throughout breakout sessions, we get to discuss various elements of our career, various elements of our art. And I think it's really anything, like any issue you've been having, anything exciting you've been experiencing, you bring to those sessions. Mm-hmm. And so it's a support group, it's a professional support group for your art.
The 6 facilitators, they really are all working artists. I think as exciting as anything about that program is the facilitators are not the teachers. They're facilitating the groups, and they're getting just as much out of the 8-week program as well.
So each of the facilitators will have approximately 4 or 5
yeah. Correct.
Participants. In that 3-hour session, you obviously have a lot of ground to cover, and then there's another week. So what happens within that week? What is the follow-through from week to week for the full 8 weeks?
Each session, the first hour of the session, is a group discussion, and typically about the previous week. The second hour of the session, an outside professional comes in under a specific topic, and it might be strategic planning or financial planning. And then the third hour of the session is a breakout session with the facilitator. So each of the group of artists break out with the facilitators and discuss everything under the sun. Yeah. And homework for next week's show.
There are business leaders who have worked with the arts for some time and have a much better perception of what is needed and how to go about it. Do you have facilitators with those skills as well?
Yes, we do. More from the administrators. One of the things that is exciting about this program is the artists are considered entrepreneurs. You know, they're self-starters, they're their own business person. And so the workshop is really to give them that entrepreneur mindset to be successful and to give them some tools.
Is there expected some kind of a ripple effect once this workshop is over?
Definitely, that you always have a network of these people, and as different generation of these come through, that you're always connected to them, that you never lose touch. As a facilitator, I think I have an obligation to stay in touch with my 5 people for a certain period of time. And then, since I participated in the workshop in Kansas City, I know there are several people that are obligated to stay in touch with me. I feel that there is this great network and this great artistic community that's formed as the result. The ripple effect is absolutely almost insured through
yes.
this program.
And so the ripple effect is the goal as much as the final achievement, because there'll be no final achievement.
Absolutely.
These are the sky's the limit.
That's absolutely right.
John Godin, chairman of the Argenta Arts Foundation, an administrator of Argenta Artist, Inc., and board member of the Mid-America Arts Alliance, and pianist Tatiana Reutmann, artist in residence at ULR Department of Music, and one of the 6 facilitators of this workshop. For information, call Donna Hardcastle at 501-993-1234. And that concludes this week's program. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UALR's College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences and UALR Public Radio.